D-Mace Finnegan and Donick 1025, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, and David Janes here with you. Willie Donick will join us momentarily. Big thanks to Willie and Derek for holding it down for me yesterday when I was out. And the reason I was out yesterday is because yesterday was Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the most important day, I would say, of the Jewish calendar. Mm-hmm. It is the Jewish Day of Atonement. And as part of atoning, you fast from sundown on Wednesday to sundown on Thursday. And yesterday, as I sat in temple, my stomach growling as I fasted, Derek, I thought about all those who I wronged over the past year. Yom Kippur is all about making amends. So I wondered to myself, do I owe Nashville SC supporters an apology for my U.S. Open Cup take on Wednesday night? I was not on the show yesterday, but I did take a glimpse at the text line, and I saw our friend Joey from Bellevue say this, quote, "Hey guys, where's Lex Luthor?" First of all, Lex Luthor, I am not a Superman fan. That may come as a shock to some of you, but what I know of Lex Luthor, other than being bald, is he's incredibly intelligent. So thank you, Joey, for the compliment.
And rich.
And rich. Okay. Yeah. Sounds even better. Joey from Bellevue said, "Hey, guys, where's Lex Luthor? I wanted to talk to him about downplaying Nashville SC winning a trophy last night," meaning Wednesday night. "He was questioning the legitimacy on Twitter." So here is where this argument stems from, Derek. And as I said the other day, this is a judgment-free zone. So if I say anything out of pocket, I want you, and when Willie shows up, I want Willie and David as well to pounce if I say anything incorrectly here. So here's where my here's where I angered Nashville SC supporters on Wednesday. So Nashville SC won the U.S. Open Cup on Wednesday night, and I saw this tweeted by the MLS account. I saw this tweeted by Nashville SC and others that this represents the first major professional sports championship in Tennessee history. And my initial reaction was, I mean, sure. And look, I am not a soccer fan at all. So just keep that in mind. But here's what I have learned, Derek Mason, about the U.S. Open Cup. It is the longest running soccer tournament in the United States. It started in 1914. So it is a prestigious tournament. There are 96 clubs that participate in this tournament at multiple levels. 16 of those 96 clubs, so one-sixth of the field, were, as my as is my understanding, full-fledged MLS teams, including Nashville SC. So this was my argument. And again, Nashville SC supporters, you can get on me, 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Nick Frazier is hanging out back there waiting to say something as Willie Donick joins us. This was my take. I will read it directly from X. Quote, "No disrespect intended to Nashville SC and its fans, but this is not the MLS championship, right? For it to be the, quote, first professional team championship for the state of Tennessee, end quote, doesn't it need to be the league's actual championship?" Now, I did not tweet this the other night, but I'm still going to say it, and I'm probably going to regret saying it.
Go ahead. Yes.
But I'm going to say it anyway.
Chaos.
There was a point on Wednesday evening when I thought to myself, wouldn't this, meaning Nashville SC winning the U.S. Open Cup, wouldn't this be the equivalent of the Memphis Grizzlies winning the NBA in-season tournament and claiming that it was the first professional team championship for the state of Tennessee?
Ooh.
Nick Frazier has his mouth over his hand over his mouth back there.
So what would you say, Nick?
That right there is disrespectful.
Oh, wow.
That's why I didn't tweet it.
Wow.
But I did say it. So, oops. I will atone for that next Yom Kippur and a year from now.
But you thought it.
I did think it, and then I decided to say it.
On live radio.
On live radio.
There you go.
So, Like, to me, look, and I mean this, I actually mean this sincerely. Nashville SC supporters, go nuts. Be proud of your team, okay? MLS fans, I would say, soccer fans in the United States. Let's do it more broadly. Mm-hmm. Soccer fans in the United States, Willie Donick can attest to this, are similar to hockey fans in the United States in quote-unquote non-traditional markets. We suffer from please like my sports syndrome. We want the casual sports fans to love our sport as much as we do. So Nashville SC supporters, I get where you're coming from. But it's going to be difficult for y'all to convince the casual sports fan that this constitutes the first major professional sports championship in Tennessee history. That is technically true, but I don't think it holds the same weight as if Nashville SC were to win the MLS Cup. Or the Titans were to win the Super Bowl, or the Predators were to win the Stanley Cup. I think it sounds like a great achievement. Again, I'm not a soccer fan. I understand that. That may undercut my entire argument. But I just can't get there.
Okay,
I can't get there. So
Nashville fans, would you rather have your team, our team, would you rather have the MLS Cup or the CONCACAF Cup? Which one would you want? Which one? I'm Nick.
That's tough, Derek, because you mentioned CONCACAF Champions Cup. It's different because that's like the whole, you know,
area.
So if you mentioned the U.S. Open Cup and in comparison to the MLS Cup, I'd say MLS Cup. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it's good to win
so
a trophy.
I didn't mean CONCACAF. I meant US
I know what
Open.
You meant. Yeah. I'd say MLS Cup, and that validates Adam's point there, because if you win a championship in soccer, it's kind of different from NHL, where if you win President's Trophy, the comparison to that is the Community Shield, which is the best record. But if you look at soccer right now and you go and compare it to U.S. Open Cup and the league and the actual MLS Cup, I'd say MLS Cup.
Okay, and I think, you know, not to disparage, you know, the U.S. Open Cup, but yes, congratulations to Nashville SC. But I would tend to think it means more if you won the MLS championship. I think the noise would be a lot louder if you won the MLS championship. Great that they won this championship, but I'm sure a lot of guys on that team, when you played it, you aim to win the MLS championship because that's the league you're in.
And one more thing to that, D-Mace. Like, in soccer, if you win multiple championships, in any sport really, but especially soccer, because you can only, for Nashville, they only qualified for two championships this year, which is U.S. Open Cup and MLS League Championship, right? Last year, they were in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, they were in the League's Cup, they were in U.S. Open Cup a few years back. Like, they were in more tournaments last 2 years than they were this year.
Okay.
So for them to win the U.S. Open Cup and the MLS Cup, potentially, that's a pretty big feat to accomplish, especially for soccer terms. Because if you win more than one championship, that's where it goes to show you that this is a different standard. I think that's where Nashville SC fans and generic soccer fans need to understand winning a championship in any aspect is great. Now, I am in the camp of not saying it's the first legit, you know, big championship, because the Preds and the Titans have done stuff like that as well, but we'll see.
Well, how would you weigh in on the Sounds winning the Pacific Coast League Championship in 2005 or the Southern League a couple of times? Like, we're talking about professional. That's professional by definition.
Now we're getting into the weeds here.
Well, I mean, that just shows that we're not looking through one prism.
Exactly.
The Grizzlies won two summer leagues, so they also won championships.
Okay.
We're also learning about how a soccer team has different things that you are playing for. It's not just, like, in my experience.
Is Frazier still back there
for professional stuff? Yeah. You're competing for a league championship. I didn't even know about these cups and tournaments when they started. Now I'm starting to learn.
I have a question for Frazier that has been posed on our text line. Is it the equivalent to winning a bowl game in college football?
Absolutely not. No, sir.
More prestigious than a bowl game?
Yes.
Okay.
If you're comparing it to the Music City Bowl, which we all love in this beautiful city
of
Nashville.
Of course. Who doesn't love the Music City Bowl?
But this is more than that.
Okay,
let's just get to our text line. Oh boy, I'm afraid.
Ooh, they coming after you.
Let's get to your texts on this. One texter says, the Vols have won championships. The Vols are not a professional team. Caleb says,
although
you're
now in the NIL.
Yeah, they are professional.
It's kind of a blurred line.
Exactly.
Caleb says, you're correct, Adam. Thank you, Caleb. Brian says, yes, Adam, you are correct, and you are the man for saying it. Thank you, Brian. Joel says, Adam, stay in your lane. Joey, who called me Lex Luthor yesterday, yeah. And again, I took that as a compliment because he's—I know he's bald.
You have a similar, yeah. You have a similar hair look.
He's bald,
as do I.
But apparently, he's both intelligent and rich. So
he's a genius.
So yeah.
But he's evil.
Joey says, Adam, stop hating on Nashville SC. Even ESPN mentioned it as Nashville's first professional trophy. One texter says, "Isn't the AFC Championship a professional championship?"
That's not the championship.
I was just telling the story. Really to Big Joe and Adam and whoever else was in here about because all of my memorabilia, Marcy has it, my ex-wife, because it's the kid stuff. So I have a few things, but that's really about it. And I have the stuff. I don't know where it is. They do. So she thought she or somebody stole my AFC championship ring. And they were going crazy looking for a call at pawn shops. And come to find out, it was deep buried in, you know, in some storage and stuff. So they got it. But I've never worn that ring. It wasn't until a month ago when she found it, well, misplaced it and found it, that I put it on. Because to me, if it's not the Super Bowl, I'm not wearing it. I'm thankful that we got it and the parade and everything, but I just can't walk around with an AFC championship ring. Just can't. So if I'm not winning my league's championship, then everything else is just kind of second place, second fiddle.
I'll give you a personal experience of mine. At Vanderbilt, when I was a freshman, we won the NIT. Mm-hmm. We cut the nets down. It was a 32-team national invitation tournament, and it was great. Mm-hmm. But we're not going around telling everybody we want a national championship. It's different than winning the NCAA tournament, right, which we reached the next year. And that was, in my mind, a better achievement, a better team.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, I think you can have a great experience of winning a big national tournament, but it's all relative. It's all in context, and I think that's what we're trying to discuss here. This is the fun part of Sports Talk Radio, right?
I won a championship.
It's not a diss, right? It's just trying to put it in its proper order in the universe.
I won a championship. What kind?
And Nick Fraser is helping us define what it does mean in the world of soccer.
NIT. That's how you say it. Yeah. Oh, I won a championship. Oh, you did? NIT.
Yeah.
NIT.
That's right. And I have a ring.
You got the ring.
And if you notice, I'm not wearing the ring. But
I don't blame you, Willie.
To bring it back.
It's
to
a nice
the,
ring, though.
Yeah.
To pretty bring nice. It back to the question I posed at the beginning of the segment. Do I owe Nashville SC fans an apology for my U.S. Open
Nick's
Cup take?
Nick Frederick just said, yes, you do.
Yes, I would say you do.
To quote the great Larry David, no apology is forthcoming.
Well, Nashville SC fans, you know who to call and where to call.
Yeah, 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by Wilson County Hunting.
Just text. Don't call.
Yes,
just text.
Yes. David screens the calls.
Exactly.
So, yes. For real, Nashville SC fans, go nuts.
Congrats.
Congratulations. I just to claim that it's the first team championship won by a professional, whatever it was, I just think it's a little bit of a stretch. Speaking of professional teams, the Tennessee Titans have released their injury report ahead of their matchup on Sunday afternoon in Glendale, Arizona.
Who?
Glendale, Arizona.
No, what professional team?
The local professional football team.
Who?
The Tennessee Titans.
Who?
They're not professional
no,
either.
No. I'm just messing with you.
I mean, they're not playing. They're not playing like a professional football team.
I'm just playing. Just Jones, and that's all.
Okay. Nevertheless, the injury report is out. J.C. Latham out again. No J.C. Latham against the Arizona Cardinals. Mike Brown will be out. Blake Hance will be out, and Bryce Oliver will be out. Tajay Spears is questionable, as is Calvin Ridley. Calvin Ridley did not practice on Wednesday or Thursday with a knee/elbow injury, but he was limited today in practice and is listed as questionable. So there is your injury report. for the Titans. And again, speaking of the Titans, Paul Kaharsky from PaulKaharsky.com will join us coming up next to discuss those Tennessee Titans. 615-737-1025 if you want to react to the Titans or if you want to yell at me. I put myself out there, Nashville SC supporters. If you want to yell at me, if you want to call me names, I had to mute my tweets on X, which is I had to mute my tweets on Twitter. I had to mute my posts on X. That's confusing. I had to mute my posts on X because y'all were saying really mean things to me. There were a couple of F-offs in there and stick to this and stick it up there.
Man, why do people get so
rude,
angry?
Rude, man. Yeah. Come on, guys. Just relax.
People, right. Why do y'all get so angry?
If I have to, I will atone for the sin next year on Yom Kippur.
It's just sports, guys. Or just remember that. It's just a sport.
615-737-1025. Wondering where to go to watch NFL games this Sunday? Come to Twin Peaks in Madison, home of the 29-degree beer, and join 1025 The Game for the pregame show before the Titans take on the Arizona Cardinals. Pregame show is brought to you by Parman Tractor and Equipment and Tennessee Brew Works. D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. We are presented by Bax Homeworks, which transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. Get a free estimate right now at baxhomeworks.com. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Paul Kaharsky from PaulKaharsky.com. First off, Paul, congratulations to your Yankees as they advance to the ALDS against the Toronto Blue Jays.
I mean, the Red Sox are a bad team, but beating the Red Sox always gives a Yankees fan joy. And to watch all of my friends who are fans of loser teams like the Mets and the Red Sox sitting at home.
Why did you even congratulate him?
Other sports is just a joy.
Is there anybody in this room who qualifies?
Happy hockey season.
Hey, Paul.
Happy hockey season.
Hold on. Hey, Paul. If the Yankees had lost, would you congratulate it? Met fans, Red Sox fans.
Yeah, I'd congratulate Mets fans for choking it away and not making the playoffs. I would.
But you definitely wouldn't congratulate Red Sox fans,
Willie. You're biting your tongue over there.
I would say, hey, you're better than us in this series, and I hate it, and I hate you,
Willie. Your thoughts?
I really like the city of Boston. It's uh-huh. just the part where it's filled with Bostonians that's the problem.
Wow, he's harsh.
Anything to add, Willie?
Hey, I have no retort. The Mets absolutely stunk it out down the stretch. So
he knows it.
I have no comeback.
He knows how it works. I mean, he's been saying that for years and years. It's on playback.
Well, the Mets sound like Cowboy fans.
The Mets have more recently. Well, I don't know. That's too much, huh? There's nothing I can say. I was going to sit here and say, when's the last time, probably Andy Pettit, the last homegrown Yankee pitcher to pitch
Cam
something
Schlittler?
Like that? Cam Schlittler, what an unbelievable – be careful how you say that, by the way.
Yeah,
that slowly. Was one of the best games I think I've seen pitched in a long – I mean, that's up there as good as you can pitch.
Yeah, he's a hero, and then McMahon going over the rails there. I mean, if they turn out to do anything, two huge moments. But they could very easily go and lose to Toronto badly. So at least they beat the Red Sox, I might wind up saying.
Let's turn our attention towards the Titans, Paul. You posted a story a couple of hours ago on PaulKaharsky.com with the headline, NFL officiating clip undercuts Titans complaint on kicking ball. For those who have not read it, what were you able to uncover about what happened against the Colts a couple of weeks ago?
Well, the NFL put out these officiating videos and narrated by Walt Anderson, who's kind of their guru for such things. And he got around to this kicking ball situation, and he basically says, and I think that according to the league, the confusion lies in on a 25-second play clock, which is what you get after a timeout, you don't have the looseness of getting the kicking ball in. So if you want the kicking ball in, they're presuming that you've made a decision. You've asked for the right ball to be placed in play. So we've seen teams run their offense off and their kicking team on during a play, But I think we'll be paying more close attention now going forward. How often is that off a 40-second play clock as opposed to a 25-second play clock? And it seems the mechanics of it, it's not a rule so much as a mechanical operations issue, are that you can't do it on a 25-second play clock. Now, I talked to some other people with some other teams. They say you get burned on it more often on a punt than on a field goal. I know John Fossil said he's never seen it before. Well, I wonder how often he's been with a head coach who's running his offense on a 25-second play clock. You've got a 25-second play clock because there was just a timeout. And usually when you're taking a timeout in such a situation, it's to decide whether you're going offense or field goal. And so, at any rate, the way the league talked there was, hey, we're happy to put the K-ball in for you. Tell us. Tell us you're going to kick, and we'll put the K-ball in. But we're not going to disrupt our operation in terms of putting a ball in play after we put the ball in play, and we put a regular ball in play because you put your offense on the field.
So, Paul, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you have said that you don't expect the Titans to make a coaching change anytime soon. But can you explain the Titans' justification, especially after Callahan, based on what you reported earlier, apparently once again demonstrated a lack of knowledge about the rules?
Yeah, I'd be careful of saying lack of knowledge about the rule. That's
fair.
It's an important distinction operation between rules here. This is not it's in a different basket to me than an elbow equaling 2 feet.
Fair enough.
I think they remain determined to stay patient. They don't know what they're going to get out of an interim coach. You know, it may be some slight boost in performance, but it also is a disruption of the consistency that they've sought to bring Cam Ward. And I know there's a logical response saying that Cam Ward's not doing anything, and you know, what's the harm in disrupting him a little bit when he'd still be with familiar people and he'd be heading towards somebody new next year anyway. They've also preached patience, and I think if you pull the rug out from under Brian Callahan right now, you're kind of saying to candidates for the job upcoming after this year, emphasizing your dysfunction and saying, like, look, we fired John Robinson during the season. We fired Brian Callahan during the season, in addition to firing Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthon, all in a very short period of time. Here's a flashing sign that says, if you have another job offer, you're better off going there than here, and we'll wind up with a lesser candidate than maybe we could have gotten, even though we have an attractive quarterback.
Now, Paul, why do you think, because we've been discussing, obviously, the quarterback, the head coach and his debacles and him giving over play calling duties, but why has, and I'm not calling for anyone to, believe me, lose their job or the heat to be turned up on anyone, but I am kind of surprised, and I was wondering if you are, that Denard Wilson, the heat hasn't been turned up on him and what his defense hasn't done. I know Jeffrey Simmons is playing well, and maybe that's why they haven't, you know, he hasn't, you know, sort of been turned up or the light isn't on him, because Jeff is playing well, Xavier Woods is playing well. So you got guys that are doing a good job, but his defense isn't close to what we thought this defense was going to be, even though you have a few players that are playing extremely well.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's paying attention to Denard because they're busy paying attention to Callahan. Mm-hmm. And so if the public are out there wanting the head coach canned, they're not as worried about the defensive coordinator. I also think there is or appeared to be more of an upgrade on offense than defense. I mean, we all knew. We at least thought there was some promise on the offensive side of the ball. Calvin Ridley had a good offseason. It looked like his connection with Cam was really meaningful. The three fourth rounders are promising pass catchers. We haven't seen enough of Helm. The offensive line was rebuilt to a certain degree and hasn't played up to the better standard that we expected. On defense, you know, I think everybody had doubts about Snead. There are no edge rushers to be excited about, so we expected no pass rush. The second inside linebacker was a big question, and now it turns out the first one isn't doing what was expected in Cody Barton, who is the second best player on the defense. The answer should be Imani Hooker, and he's not played well, and so it's a real challenge to name who that guy is. Xavier Wood is, Woods is probably that guy who's the third best player. That's a real tough call. But I do think Denard talking about simplifying things now. I mean, the reason you complicated things in the first place is because you don't have the talent to affect things. So you try to, you know, create some things that'll be hard to read for an offense. You do that and it doesn't work, and now you have to dumb it down, and your talent still isn't going to match up.
Paul Karosky is with us. And Paul, we've been trying to get through this theme this week of the best answer. So we want your perspective, and that is when you know you are in a fire, right? There's fire all around Cam Ward, and the goal is to get him through the fire, right? You have J.C. Latham's injury, which is causing all kinds of problems. You have Calvin Ridley's now hurt. He wasn't productive. You've got all these things that have gone wrong, even with a shaky group of talent at its best when he was coming in. How do you call plays when you have this much adversity around a rookie quarterback?
Well, my personal opinion is, you know, he's best when things break down. So what kind of mimics things breaking down? I think they're going to put him on the move. I've been preaching that this week. And I know, you know, you want to develop him, and putting him on the move cuts the field in half and everything and feels like, well, we're not fully developing him. Well, you got to find a balance between insisting on, you know, a pocket play that forces him to make a full field read and saying, well, we're not putting him on the move because we don't think he can make a full field read. We're putting him on the move because we've had better results with plays with him on the move. Now, he was on the move when he threw the interception, and I don't know why he was compelled to both leave his feet and drop into a, you know, I thought, super sidearm. But I think putting him on the move just gets him into a better flow. And I'm not saying do it all the time, but I am suggesting that they do it more. He and Isle Manners seem to have their best connection on that, and that's maybe the best thing they've got going for him. And maybe plays like that give them a better feel, and you know, right from the snap, something's happening for the offense, right? It's not just about looking for something, but everybody's got somewhere to go. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's how I'm feeling.
Do you think 79% of plays out of the shotgun is too high of a percentage?
I wouldn't have said it at the beginning of the season, to be honest, but the way things are trending in the league with quarterbacks going back on their center and two tight end being popular and the best teams having the best success out of that, now I think you have to look at the league and say, yes, it's too much. But, you know, how good is he from under center? How does it lend itself to the protection issues that they have? All of those things, I think, go into consideration. But I'm going to be very curious, as it sounds like you are, to see if they do go under center more and do maybe play more two tight end. I don't think they're getting the blocking that they necessarily need out of two tight end. But, I mean, I think Udo's going to need help there no matter who they're playing. So you automatically need one. And I'd rather see Helm maybe than Lockett on some plays.
I want to ask you one more about how you asked this, and this is a particular example of what I think is an issue going forward. You know you're going to have trouble winning a lot of games anyway, but you're trying to preserve your rookie quarterback. You were talking about the end of the half. They ran it. You know, they didn't maybe take a shot where they probably in the back of their mind said, I don't think we can protect him. We got all kinds of issues and we're risking things. So the development versus maybe taking the quote best shot to win, a third and 12 where you maybe run a draw play, where maybe the best play to call is to take a shot with his strong arm. I'm curious about that issue going forward when you're trying to preserve him but you're also trying to develop him. I think that also goes in line with, do you try to develop him under center while the season's going on, knowing whether you win or lose the game, maybe the big picture is not the most important thing as much as it is developing him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it also shows zero confidence in your line. I mean, well,
why would you have any
confidence
in their line? Why would you have any with this particular line without Latham in there?
Yeah, you come in, you max protect, you send two guys deep, and we see it happen all the time around the league. I know the Titans feel like they haven't been getting the calls, and certainly on the Cam Ward play where he got hit in the head, they didn't. But we see teams throw downfield in those situations all the time, going for a home run, where maybe you hit the home run, you've got a play set up that you're hitting a home run or it's incomplete, or maybe you get a pass interference. And if he's going to get killed, have him throw it away. So it's not either you run it or he gets killed. I think it's either you run it or you get a shot off or he throws it away and take the gets killed out of it. I understand there's a percentage where he gets killed because he can't throw it away or whatever. But I think you're really being doomsday-ish where you say we can't get ourselves into a situation where we could take a home run chance on plays where people around the league take a home run chance on a 3rd and 12 when you're in field goal range where the 5 yards aren't going to make that much of a difference to Joey Sly, even under the circumstances where he missed that field goal. And you just take yourself out, a team that can't score touchdowns, takes itself out of, a low percentage chance to score a touchdown, but a play where there is a percentage chance to score a touchdown.
Pretty small percentage with this group.
But I do think it's some kind of a hope for your team. Like, hey, look, we do go for it. We do think that, you know, maybe we can make something happen as opposed to, like, tuck our tails and go to the locker room pretty much. Like, I don't know. It's got a feel of fight to me.
Paul Kaharsky of PaulKaharsky.com has been our guest on D-Maze, Ving, and Donick. You can catch him every Wednesday morning with Robbie and Rex Road. Paul, great stuff. As always, we'll catch up soon.
Hey, take the night off today, guys. But tomorrow there's baseball. So be sure to check the
time. The Tigers play tomorrow.
We welcome all bandwagon jumpers.
Nobody jumps on the Yankees bandwagon. Nobody. Nobody ever.
Dying to come jump on the Yankees bandwagon.
Nobody ever jumps on their bandwagon.
Is that bandwagon ever full?
Very pretty uniform. Very pretty.
Thank you, Paul.
See you guys.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, can the Titans actually close out a game for once? We will discuss that coming up next, 615-737-1025. This Sunday, the NFL Game of the Week is the Dallas Cowboys against the New York Jets at noon on Sports Talk 830. The NFL Game of the Week is presented by Circus Sportsbook Kentucky and Macero and 12 South.
It's the reason why we come in and be like, you know, we right there. It's the reason why we come in and be like, you know, I feel like we have a chance to go win football games on Sundays because it's the small things that when you get into fourth quarter, and we're talking about it, and I'm sure you guys hear from Denard, like, you know, we get into the fourth quarter and start making up things. You know, we're missing too many tackles. You know, he showed us a stat today to where we had 2 missed tackles in the first half versus in our second half of the games, we got like 35 missed tackles. And that shows, you know, a football team that not doing the things and being held in that stamina into the second half. So I think that's the thing we need to focus on to win football games. And you know, like I said, it's the reason why I come in and say, you know, we are right there. It's just a small thing we can fix that's going to help us win a football game.
That was Jeffrey Simmons talking about the Titans' inability to close out games. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. The Titans are 0-4, but in their first 2 games of the season, losses to the Broncos and Rams, the Titans held leads in the third quarter. They were up 12-10 on the Broncos in the third quarter and 16-13 on the Rams in the third quarter. And just last week against the Houston Texans, they were only down 6-0 entering the fourth quarter. But as we have seen this season, the Titans defense runs out of gas as the game progresses. I honestly, I get it. the defense has had to do a lot of heavy lifting to keep the Titans in these games. Here is their quarter-by-quarter point differential, guys. In the first quarter, the Titans have been outscored 30-6. Not good. In the second quarter, the Titans have actually outscored their opponents 22-16. In the third quarter, the Titans have been outscored 27-13. In the fourth quarter, the Titans have been outscored 47-10. 47-10. So what is it going to take for the Titans to close out a game for once? Arizona is coming off of two consecutive losses. In both of those losses, they mustered 3 points in the first half in each of those games. So we could be, whatever the opposite of a nail biter is, we could be in store for that on Sunday. And we will talk about a potential actually nail-biting game between Vanderbilt and Alabama in just a moment. But, Derek, what is it going to take for the Titans to actually close out a game?
Well, you have to get the lead to close it out.
Yeah, you get the lead to close it out.
They've had three offensive plays with the ball in the lead all year.
That is the first thing.
So I guess they failed to close that game out in the three plays before they got the ball back and they were not in the lead anymore.
Yeah, fair enough.
Jeffrey just said it. You know, they go from missing two tackles to missing 32 tackles. We've all watched the game in the second half, each one of these games. We saw the Indianapolis game or the Rams game when they couldn't seem like they couldn't get the back on the ground. We saw the game where, you know, Puka Nacua makes one cut and safety misses it. Even though Xavier Woods playing good, he blew a tackle, missed tackle there. So again, it goes back to when you are a team that lacks like top end talent. You have some few, one, maybe two. When you don't have that top end talent, you can't afford to make many mistakes. And the Titans, not only do they not have a roster that can go toe-to-toe for four quarters, those guys that you're asking to be your leaders and asking to, you know, take some of the slack, those guys aren't playing well. Those guys are missing tackles. Those guys are doing things that are helping you lose, not help you win, or stop you from winning, not helping you win. So first and foremost, it starts right there. Do what you're supposed to do when you're supposed to do it. Be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. Whatever assignment there is, do your job. Don't try to do everybody else's job. You can't afford to guess right now. Why? Because guessing are for good teams. You're a bad team. You can't afford to guess, okay? Because good teams, when they guess, usually have somebody else to back them up. When you guess on this team, you ain't got nobody to back you up. We saw what happened with Legarius Sneed. Played the wrong technique. Whoop, 33-yard pickup, first down on 3rd and 59. Okay? So you can't afford to make no mistakes like that. So that's where it's going to have to start first. Doing your job and your job alone. Making sure if I say set the edge, you set the edge. Don't try to do nothing else. Okay? That's what it's going to take for a team that is depleted of talent. And the talent that they do have isn't playing well or that's not playing. They got to limit the mistakes. They got to limit the missed tackles. They got to limit the turnovers. But that's on offense. And they hadn't had many of those. But defense, that's where it starts. Doing your job, playing the technique. You do your job, play the technique. Some of those missed tackles, 32, you're not going to have. And that may end up in you winning a game as opposed to losing one.
I do think there is a pattern. I do think that They have looked like they've gotten worn down some. And I think it's a little bit of morale. It's definitely lack of depth and talent. And I just think sometimes that just over the course of a good game, the better team figures you out. The cream rises to the top. I definitely thought that was the case in the Rams game, where the Titans were right in the game. They were leading the game with about 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. But the Rams were just the stronger team. They finished the game. They were the better team. They figured it out. And there was a little bit of a collapse. And I think it's hard when you're behind and you have to pitch a perfect game with the support you're getting from the offense to continuously go out there and have to try to shut teams down when you're just not getting any. There's nothing on the board. It's there's no margin for error.
Here's another example. The Titans, was it this past game? Yeah. They had an opportunity to sack the quarterback like two or three times and missed them.
Yeah,
and the quarterback ended up gaining.
That happens a lot.
They end up gaining yardage on those plays.
Daniel Jones comes to mind in the Colts game.
Yes. There was so scrambles. When you have opportunities to make the tackle in the backfield or make the tackle to stop them on third down, do you make it? That's like us, all of us in this room on a row team. And we're all rowing, and then all of a sudden, I decide to row the other way. We'll still go forward, but it's going to be hard. And eventually, everybody's going to get tired, and we're going to lose. That's what happened to the Titans. You got a bunch of guys rowing one way, and then one or two guys either not playing the way they need to, or they're doing their own thing, and they're rowing the opposite way. And we can play like that for a quarter, maybe two. But when it comes third and fourth quarter, it slows everybody down. It wears everybody down. You're wearing your own self down, Titans, because you got people rowing north when everybody else is going south.
Let's go to Mike on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Mike, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Yeah, my question is, my comment really is, I don't want to see Cam Ward under center under any circumstances for the rest of the season. And the reason I say this is that we don't have an offensive line, really, that can protect him. And if he's in the shotgun four or five, steps back, you can still hand off. But then he can still see the development of the rushers. And what I don't want to see him is under center. Then we're going to call a passing play or whatever. He then has to start backpedaling to set up for it, and then the pocket collapses. And then he gets crushed, even if he gets rid of the ball. So I want him physically protected the rest of the season, shotgun only, then run your plays from there. He can still run outside and throw passes from shotgun, but at least he's got 2-3 seconds to see what's coming at him.
Thank you for the call, Mike. Willie?
It's a good question, but then aren't you stunting his growth? Wouldn't you eventually like to see him be able to get comfortable? If you never do it, how's he going to get good at it? It's like if you don't learn how to drive the stick shift, you're probably never going to learn how to drive the stick shift.
I don't think it'd stunt his growth any, because I think there are a lot of quarterbacks. Because when I say, or I hope the caller means don't ever put him underneath center, I think there are a few times you have to put him underneath center. But we talked about this the other day. Keeping Cam in the center, and a shotgun protects him in my case, because to me, he gets underneath center, he turns his back to the ball. Man, oh man, maybe that's why, because he's in shotgun, he has a little bit more time to throw. Just think if he was underneath center, it probably wouldn't be as long. And I don't think the 2.5-3 seconds was long. I think it was 2.5 seconds, something like that.
615-737-1025, your thoughts on the Titans as they prepare to take on the Arizona Cardinals on Sunday afternoon. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, the biggest football game in our fair city this weekend is Vanderbilt at Alabama. And I have a question about perception when it comes to Vanderbilt that I want to pose to Willie and Derek and all of you. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Speaking of that game, the Commodores, of course, will take on Alabama tomorrow. Pre-game begins at 1 o'clock on 94.9 The Fan with the kickoff at 2:30. Vanderbilt football is brought to you by Gary Force Acura, Jimmy Kelly Steakhouse, and Smoky Mountain Tops.